WVW Broadcast Network and The New American are pleased to present The New American TV. This broadcast is committed to helping you understand the truth behind the news. Now, here's your host, Paul Dragoo.
Welcome to The New American TV, where we bring you the truth behind the news. It's Monday, March 27th, and I'm your host, Paul Dragoo. Here are the stories we're following today. So it looks like the Biden family just can't keep its China dealings swept under the rug. Earlier this month, the majority staff of the House Committee on Oversight and Accountability sent out a memo about new evidence that their investigation discovered about the Biden family's influence peddling and business schemes. The memo says the committee has financial records related to a Biden family associate named Mr. John Robinson Walker. The records show that Walker used his company to transfer Chinese money to Biden family members. Specifically, they show that on March 1st, 2017, less than 2 months after Vice President Joe Biden left public office, State Energy HK Limited, a Chinese company, wired $3 million to Robinson Walker LLC. After receiving the $3 million from the Chinese company, Robinson Walker LLC began incrementally transferring more than $1 million to Biden family members and their companies over a three-month period. The recipients of the money included Hallie Biden, companies associated with Hunter and James Biden, and an unknown bank account identified as simply Biden. Reporters asked President Joe Biden about this blockbuster committee memo.
Any reaction to House GOP's memo about your family dealings, sir? Any reaction to House GOP's new memo about your family dealings, sir?
Family dealings.
Yes, you're revealing that Hunter Biden's business associate sent over $1 million to three of your family members. Any reaction to that report?
Do you have any reaction to the Russian jet that took down the U.S. drone? Mr. President.
Is this guy awake? In case you couldn't quite make out what he said, his response was not true. Assuming he understood the question and where he was, Biden's response is shameless, considering the House Oversight Committee has bank records proving that the transfers happened. Biden appeared more cognizant back in 2020 when he denied that his son Hunter received Chinese money.
My son has not made money in terms of this thing about, what are you talking about, China.
As for House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer, he seems dedicated to pursuing the truth. In a tweet on Friday, Comer asked, "Why is the Biden family taking in millions of dollars from our foreign adversaries?" Here's Comer.
"Right now, our number one concern is the Biden family influence peddling. He's the current president of the United States. We've already provided bank records that show that his family's taken at least over $1 million from the Chinese Communist Party for no explanation. So we're concerned about whether or not this White House is compromised. So it's a national security risk. At the end of the day, I plan on passing legislation to define what is influence peddling, what is allowable, what isn't allowable. We want to beef up the ethics rules. We want to significantly increase the disclosure rules. So at the end of the day, I'll look into things that the Trump family and Jared Kushner were involved in as well. But right now, this is of the utmost concern of our national security. Why are the Bidens taking millions and millions of dollars from our adversaries around the world?"
Good question. And last Friday, we saw a rare episode of bipartisanship in the House as members from both sides of the aisle grilled TikTok CEO Shou Chu for more than 4 hours. Congress is considering banning TikTok in the U.S. because of the company's connections to the Chinese government and the Chinese Communist Party. For years, there's been a concern that TikTok is a way for the CCP to not only influence public opinion and cause harm to American youth, but to also collect data on the tens of millions of Americans who use the popular app. Here's Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers on TikTok's harm.
TikTok also targets our children. The For You algorithm is a tool for TikTok to own their attention and prey on their innocence. Within minutes of creating an account, your algorithm can promote suicide, self-harm, and eating disorders to children. It encourages challenges for them to put their lives in danger and allows adults to prey on our beautiful, beloved daughters. It's also a portal for drug dealers to sell illicit fentanyl that China has banned, yet is helping Mexican cartels produce, send across our border, and poison our children. In China, the CCP proactively prohibits this type of TikTok content that promotes death and despair to kids. From the data it collects to the content it controls, TikTok is a grave threat of foreign influence in American life. It's been said it's like allowing the Soviet Union the power to produce Saturday morning cartoons during the Cold War, but much more powerful and much more dangerous. Banning your platform will address the immediate threats. Make no mistake, this committee is also looking to the future. America needs to be prepared to stop the next technological tool or weapon China will use for its own strategic gain. We must prevent any app, website, and platform like TikTok from ever spying on Americans again.
After hours of questioning, Chu wasn't able to convince Congress that TikTok would become completely independent from its parent corporation, Chinese company ByteDance. Chu refused to answer questions on the Uyghur genocide in China, showing that he is very much beholden to the Chinese government, no matter what he might say to the contrary.
Mr. Chu, do you agree that the Chinese government has persecuted the Uyghur population?
Congresswoman, you, if you use our app and you open it, you will find our users who get all sorts of content.
That's not my question. My question is, do you agree that the Chinese government has persecuted the Uyghur population?
Well, it's deeply concerning to hear about all accounts of human rights abuse. My role here is to explain what our platform does on this.
It's a pretty easy question. Do you agree that the Chinese government has persecuted the Uyghur population?
Congresswoman, I'm here to describe TikTok and what we do as a platform. And as a platform, we allow our users to freely express their views on this issue
Earlier
and any
today,
other issue that matters to them.
Well, you didn't answer the question.
Since both sides of the aisle seem to agree that TikTok is a serious threat to privacy and national security, it looks like the company may actually get banned. If that happens, Congress might also want to start looking into CCP control and influence in American social media platforms, YouTube and Facebook, as well as in the media and entertainment sectors, from Hollywood to the NBA. So join me to discuss today's stories is Executive Senior Editor of The New American, Steve Bonta. Welcome, Steve.
Hi, Paul.
So, Steve, we've known the influence and the danger of TikTok for years, and I believe even Trump had mentioned it years ago. Why are we seriously looking at it now and seriously considering banning it?
Well, it could partly have to do with the Republican control of the House. It could simply be an idea whose time has come. Now, India and Pakistan both banned TikTok, I think it was in 2020, right during the pandemic, because India in particular, did perceive perhaps much sooner than we did just the overall malign intent of China. And it's not just TikTok, okay? The issue is this. TikTok is a media company that makes vast amounts of money, primarily for the Chinese. Okay, it is a Chinese company, although its parent company. But you know, it's supposedly there's this wall of separation between ByteDance, the parent's company, and TikTok. That's not true, and these hearings show that. But there are a whole range of Chinese social media companies and things. They have their equivalent to YouTube, and their equivalent to Facebook, and their equivalent to Instagram, and on and on and on. Their equivalent to Google, search engines, and all the rest of this. And all of these have exclusive access to the Chinese market. They're not blocked in the United States. So if you wanted to download, WeChat or Weibo or obviously TikTok or anything else, you can do that without any problem in the United States. So they also make money here and in Europe and the rest of the world. But the reverse is not true, because Facebook is completely blocked
in China,
banned. Oh yes, there is no difference. Okay, it's banned, and particularly for Chinese citizens, if you get caught using Facebook or Google or YouTube or even Wikipedia. Nowadays, using a VPN, which is prohibited, you know, you'll get in serious trouble. Foreigners living in China, they tend to look the other way, right? So foreigners can still, but they're banned by law in China.
Yeah.
So we don't get to tap in, our social media and internet companies don't get reciprocity at all. But this is okay for the communist Chinese. They don't seem to have a problem with this. And of course, they're screaming bloody murder now about the action with TikTok.
So you believe it might actually happen for once, huh?
Well, I think it might because, I mean, I watched or listened to almost the entirety of the 4.5+ hours of hearings.
Yeah.
So you
good don't viewers. Have to.
Don't have to. but, it, you know, what I what got out of it was this. I mean, there was some differences in perspective between the Democrat side and the Republican side, but they did, you know, the line of questioning to Mr. Chu was unremittingly hostile, unremittingly skeptical. A number of them trotted out evidence from, you know, past statements he and other representatives of TikTok have made that stand in direct contradiction to his strong assertions last Friday that, well, you know, we have no connection with China, that with the Chinese. And he kept saying the Chinese government.
Yeah.
And so, because he knows very well that the Chinese government and the Chinese Communist Party are not necessarily the same thing.
So he's probably right?
All members of the government are members of the CCP, but large, you know, millions and millions of members of the CCP are not necessarily, you know, in the Chinese Politburo or whatever.
But there's right. no separation. I mean, the Chinese government has power over everything under the Chinese umbrella, right?
That's right. And in China,
yeah.
Number one, there is no such thing as a private company, at least of right. the big ones. The
that
consequential companies are all controlled by the Communist Party. And the way they do this is they require, you know, Communist Party members in good standing to sit on the board, to be part of the decision-making yeah. process, to spy on the workers, to make sure that, you know, nothing forbidden is being discussed or concerned. And so the fact that, for example, he refused to comment at all on the Uyghur situation in China
yeah.
was very revealing, because he knows very well that if he'd made any kind of a statement like, well, you know, obviously some really bad things are happening in Xinjiang to the Uyghurs or something like that, he would have been in big trouble.
Yeah, he wouldn't
so
want to go
back
home. So
that alone put the lie to his otherwise very persuasive, well, you know, we're putting yeah. everything in the Oracle servers in Texas, the Texas project, you know, and once that's done, you know, the Chinese engineers will have zero access to the data and this and that. That will never be the case.
Yeah, he did a typical evasion job there.
Sure.
What about this this Biden memo here from the House Committee on Oversight and Accountability? Is that another event whose time has come? We've known, I mean, this is almost not news, but does it look like something might actually come out this time and there might be some action taken?
Well, there could be. You know, to me, it smacks of what they used to call deja vu all over again. So those of you out there who remember the good old days of the Clinton administration will perhaps remember that when Bill Clinton was impeached, originally there were three articles of impeachment, not one.
Mm-hmm.
And the other two, the one that eventually was passed from the House, was the one accusing him of, with regard to the Monica Lewinsky affair. The other two had to do with his influence, with corrupting influence and campaign monies and so forth that came from Communist China back in the day. And back then, as now, it came out that there was a book called, for example, Year of the Rat, that detailed all of this. It's pretty disgusting that Clinton and his associates were always in contact with various shady Chinese businessmen and politicians and the Riady family, who their name doesn't sound Chinese, but in fact they're overseas Chinese businessmen living in Indonesia and so forth and so on. And it was pretty much shown that in exchange for large campaign contributions to his reelection coffers, he gave the Chinese a lot of nice quid pro quo. For example, transfer of critical nuclear missile technology that enabled the Chinese to go from a country that had a few nuclear devices that were not deliverable to American shores to a country that a few years later had mastered the intricate gimbal technology, allowing them to launch ICBMs that can hit the United States. So that was one thing. And you know, another thing was the Chinese desperately wanted to get into the WTO. So they could take advantage of that. And Clinton assured them that he would make it happen. And we're living with the consequences today. So I see this as kind of a reprise of the 1990s. Again, I mean, back 25 years ago, Clinton was, ultimately the evidence was swept under a rug. It was too explosive. Whether that will happen this time with the Biden family remains to be seen.
Thanks, Steve. Let's look at our other stories. And people in Mississippi are still picking up the pieces after devastating tornadoes ripped through the southeastern United States over the weekend. This WTVA meteorologist was tracking a tornado's approach on radar and actually prayed aloud on the air.
We got a new scan coming in here as we speak. Oh, man. Like, north side of Amory, this is coming in. Oh, man. Dear Jesus, please help them. Amen.
The storms killed 25 and injured dozens more. Here's drone footage of damage in one of the areas hit hardest, Rolling Fork, Mississippi. Sky News reported that the devastation was so widespread that storm chasers abandoned their thrill seeking to pitch in on a search and rescue and drive injured people to the hospital. Governor Tate Reeves declared a state of emergency in four counties. And early Sunday morning, President Joe Biden declared a major disaster in Mississippi, promising federal aid to supplement recovery efforts. The storms hit Alabama, too, killing one person there. Then on Sunday morning, tornadoes hit Alabama again and swept across Georgia. Worst hit was the town of West Point. Georgia Governor Brian Kemp issued a state of emergency. And adding to their trauma, the residents of Troup County had to deal with the fact that two tigers escaped from a storm-damaged zoo about 80 miles south of Atlanta. Authorities quickly found and tranquilized them and then returned them to a secure enclosure. Thank goodness. And the French are ticked off. Massive protests and riots are raging across the country over President Emmanuel Macron's pension reform program that raises the retirement age by 2 years. Macron insists it's the only way to keep France's generous government pension system going. Sanitation, air traffic, and rail workers have joined the protesters, halting many essential services. The violence even caused the UK's King Charles to postpone a trip. Reports say that at least 172 protesters have been arrested and about 150 police officers have been injured in incidents all over the nation. Harsh police crackdowns on protests in some cities have led the Council of Europe to criticize the way that Macron is handling the uprising. Labor unions in the country have warned of massive social unrest if Macron doesn't back down. So far, he has said he's willing to talk to the unions, but he won't change his mind about the pension reforms. And for our last story, a Texas legislator has introduced a resolution that, if passed, would open the entire U.S. Constitution for revision. The New American Magazine reported on Thursday that Chairman of the U.S. House Budget Committee, Republican Representative Jody Arrington, has introduced a resolution that would call for a federal constitutional convention to propose a balanced budget amendment. The idea is that if Congress had a constitutional amendment telling it not to spend too much money, it would obey. You know, the way Congress obeys all the other shall nots already in the Constitution. If passed, the convention delegates would have the power to get rid of any state limitations and craft an entirely new constitution with its own ways of ratification. This analysis is based on the precedent set by the first and only convention called to amend the nation's governing document, the Philadelphia Convention of 1787. So for decades, the parent company of this magazine, the John Birch Society, has organized against all constitutional convention efforts. Despite being significantly outspent by a pro-convention lobby group that considers itself conservative, JBS members have beat back most efforts to fool state legislatures into applying for a convention, or a con-con, as we call it. Just this year alone, Birchers have quashed convention efforts in some of the reddest state legislatures in the country, including those of South Dakota, Montana, and Wyoming. Armed only with the currency of robust arguments, JBS members have held the line on this important battle that you don't normally hear about in the news. After the break, we're going to take a deeper look at why a convention is so dangerous and at real solutions to our runaway government. So, Steve, is this what happens regarding the French over there when the country runs out of money?
You know, Paul, I love France. I love the French. I will always have a soft spot for them. But imagine what they could accomplish if they got that excited, that passionate about things that actually matter.
Right.
That's my reaction. I mean, this is a country already where leisure is the number one national pastime. I mean, that sounds almost redundant, but I think they're guaranteed something like 60 vacation days a year.
Wow, 2 months?
At least, yeah, something like that.
Wow.
I mean, their retirement age is relatively, yeah, let's put it this way, I think it's younger than I am now.
Yeah.
So
I remember when this happened in Greece a few years back, something similar, and I was actually working at a restaurant in Alpharetta, Georgia, owned by Greeks. And, you know, they were discussing it and they were basically saying, we're out of money. Greeks are just pissed off that they can't do what they've always done, which is, you know, lounge around and you know, sit around at lunch and work as little as possible, you know? So I was just wondering if this is part of it. But I guess at some point the money runs out, right? Perhaps?
Well, at some point, as Margaret Thatcher once memorably said, socialism runs out of other people's money.
There you go. Well, thank you, sir. Stay tuned for my interview with JBS Project Research Manager Christian Gomez after these messages.
If Americans want to remain a free and sovereign nation, more people need to understand the principles and values that built this great nation. At the John Birch Society, we have the organization, the plan, and the resources to do just that. Our founder, Robert Welch, said, "Education is our total strategy and truth our only weapon." Go to jbs.org to learn more, including how you can get involved to work locally and impact nationally. Join the John Birch Society today.
Here's the news, Dad.
Is it, son? Is it?
What about this one, Dad?
Nope. It's hard to tell what's real and what's fake these days. There's just too much baloney out there. At the New American, they cut through the baloney and give me the truth.
The truth is hard to find, but the New American has it. Check it out at thenewamerican.com.
All right, parents, listen up. We've all seen the countless examples of how radical leftists have been destroying American schools. It's no longer just about the terrible math and reading levels. Now radical left teachers birthed from liberal universities are forcing gender indoctrination in kindergarten. They're teaching lessons on white guilt.
Freedom Project Academy has perfected live online learning over the course of a decade. I get a ton of great feedback about this program, a ton.
They're built on Judeo-Christian values, a classical curriculum. What does that mean? It means they're taught, your children are taught the way that the founding generations of the country. My own son, Noah, did Freedom Project Academy for several years when he was younger.
The more we tell our friends about these things, the more people will get on board, and I believe that we can be the catalyst to some real change.
We must save the West. Our way of life and our culture is under attack, and because of patriots like you and your project, I have optimism for the future.
I certainly would not want a constitutional convention. I mean, whoa. Who knows what would come out of that?
It isn't the Constitution that's the problem. It is the people who ignore the Constitution.
What we need are just more people that would read the one we have.
It's up to us to hold our elected officials accountable.
Who understand the Constitution and are willing to take a stand when necessary.
Welcome back. I am here with JBS Project Research Manager Christian Gomez to discuss the latest effort at a con. Welcome, Christian.
It's good to be on. Thank you for having me.
So I went over the story a little bit in the last segment, and I think you saw it. Is this some sort of effort to get around the fact that the CONCON effort and those who are pushing it just can't seem to get it through in state legislatures?
Yeah, it's definitely a change of strategy. So typically for the Article 5 convention, for those who are watching who are not familiar, Article 5 is simply the part of the Constitution that informs you, it's about a paragraph long, how to amend the U.S. Constitution. Mm-hmm. And there's two methods. There is the method where two-thirds of both chambers of the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate would propose an amendment to the U.S. Constitution, and then three-fourths of the states ratify it either by the state legislatures or special state conventions. The other method to amend the Constitution, which has never been used,
right.
In fact, all the 27 amendments that we have, including the first 10, the Bill of Rights, all came about by the first method I mentioned. But the alternative method that's never been used is a method where Congress calls a convention on the applications of two-thirds of the states, which out of 50 states would be 34 states would have to apply to Congress for a convention. So there's different organizations that want a convention for different reasons. The most well-known one historically has been that for the Balanced Budget Amendment. And at present, they had a higher number, then they lost a few, then they gained a few back.
Yeah.
But right now, they stand at 26 states with outstanding or live applications or continuing applications for a constitutional convention. And there's other organizations which have their own tallies, like Convention of States. They have about 19 states, and there's other groups, et cetera. Well, those who have been wanting the balanced budget amendment, just that one alone, aren't pleased that they're at 26 states presently. So historically, they would always argue that all of the applications from the different states have to be worded the same to count towards the 34 needed in order to have the convention. Now the new strategy is, and this new strategy, by the way, began in 2018, but what it is that we're going to take all the wording that is the same, so 26 presently for a balanced budget amendment constitutional convention, along with additional applications that are what they call plenary or for an open convention that don't specify what the purpose of the convention was for, because when they pass the application, it looks to be open in general.
Yeah.
And so back in 2018, Robert Nadelson, he's this supposed expert on Article 5. He writes a lot, often cites himself in his own papers.
Does he? Oh, yes. That's awesome.
In 2018, he wrote a paper called Federalism and Separation of Powers, Counting to the Two-Thirds, How Close Are We to a Convention for Proposing Amendments to the Constitution? And he mentioned in his paper that there were six states that had what he considered to be plenary convention applications. So those six states were Illinois, Kentucky, New Jersey, New York, Oregon, and the state of Washington. Now, what's interesting is that the New York application, because I went through these are these really plenary? Are they really for just an open total, let's open up the Constitution and amend it however we see fit? Well, the New York application is from the year 1789.
Wow.
Which is the oldest one of the bunch. And it specifically states that it wants a convention of deputies of the several states for the purpose of adding an amendment to protect the unalienable rights of mankind. I'm kind of paraphrasing what the wording of that application was. But essentially, what they were applying for was a convention to propose what we would now call the Bill of Rights, because they passed that application after the Constitution was ratified, but before Congress, and several months later, introduced what became the Bill of Rights. So there was no Bill of Rights yet, even though we have the Constitution. So that's what New York's application was about. It wasn't for a totally open convention to do whatever they wanted. Yeah. They actually had a purpose in what they wanted that convention to accomplish.
Well, let's talk about the reasons that they're claiming we need a convention for. And two of the most common reasons are term limits, right, and balanced budget. And they're saying we need to do this to control our runaway government. But why do we oppose it, tooth and nail? You know, our members working with so many other organizations, including Eagle Forum, and I think a subset of Ron Paul's folks, among others, have stopped them over and over. And what we've noticed is that whenever state legislators hear the arguments, they normally choose against a convention, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Alex Newman, our colleague at the New American, interviewed a legislator from Montana, Brad Tashita. He introduced the Convention of States application for a con. He thought he understood the issue, and then a week after introducing it, he decides to make a statement in front of the legislature backing out of that, trying to withdraw his support for his own bill because he learned in that 1 week period he was educated about the other side of a convention, which was stuff he was never told by those who wanted the convention. And we hear this a lot from folks who used to be in favor of a convention because they often see the well-intention of we can use this to limit government, so they believe, but then they learn the dangers of the actual convention process itself, and they back away. And in the first segment, you mentioned, in fact, how if this convention was to occur, or any Article 5 convention, they could throw out the limitations of the state that the states would impose. Because the argument in favor is, oh, the states will control this process because our application is limited to only this. And sometimes they'll even pass these delegate bills that define what the scope of the authority of the delegates is. But this is a replay of 1787 in Philadelphia. They had a convention for the strict and limited purpose of revising the Articles of Confederation, the then Constitution of the country, and they had limitations from all the states as to what their authority was. Even Rhode Island, the one of the 13 states that did not participate, wrote a letter to the other 12 states at the convention saying, remember, whatever you do has to be unanimous. We have to agree to it too, because under the Articles of Confederation, Article number 13, it said that any changes to the Articles of Confederation have to be agreed to unanimously. And today we're told that the convention will be limited because the states are limiting it, and that whatever comes out has to be agreed by 3/4 of the states. But what happened in Philadelphia in 1787? They didn't amend the Articles of Confederation. They scrapped it in favor of a new, unfortunately, better constitution. And did they go to 3/4 of the states for ratification? Did they go to all the states for ratification as required by the Articles of Confederation?
You mentioned, fortunately, we got something better. Now, there's not a whole lot of confidence that that's going to be the case this time. For instance, one of the biggest proponents of a con for a long time was Glenn Beck, right? He was one of the first, and he was always touted, and this is what the Convention of States organization does, is they have their little list of people and endorsers. But he backed out recently, and he backed out because, as he put it, we are not the type of people who need to be messing with that. Now, let's not make any mistake. And one of our best allies, Joanna, has showed over and over how they have constitutions waiting in the wings. The Nation, a very progressive, just a leftist magazine, has made the point in an article that this would be a great opportunity for the left to codify its projects, whether it be abortion, whether it be all sorts of equity measures and things like that. We got 1 minute, 2 minutes. Let's go over the fact, because then they'll be like, well, what's your answer? Because this always comes back. Well, you don't have answers. What is the answer, Christian? If it's not a convention of states, what do we propose to restore this nation?
I'm glad you asked. The John Birch Society has an action project entitled Rein in Big Government with Nullification. And you can find that on jbs.org. And nullification, it's based off of the Constitution, the 10th Amendment, but more specifically within the Constitution itself, Article 6, not 5, Article 6 of the Constitution would state, it's the part that says that all members of elected to various levels of government have to take an oath to the Constitution, and that only those laws which are made in accordance to the Constitution are the supreme law of the land. So this means that if a law is passed or any judgment is made by a court and it's not in agreement with the text of the Constitution, the articles preceding, you know, Article 6, Articles 1 through 5, for example, if it's not in accordance to that Constitution, then it's not the supreme law of the land. And members of government, even at the state level, are obligated by oath to uphold the Constitution. So legislators at the state level have the obligation to nullify, which is to ignore any kind of federal laws, edicts, statements, rules, regulations, court rulings that violate the wording of the U.S. Constitution.
Well, let's not also forget that when it comes to term limits, we already have those. It's called elections.
Oh, yes,
right.
Absolutely.
So if you want to, if you're so bent on getting rid of someone, get them voted out.
That's right.
You know, it's like the people who are going to vote for Nancy Pelosi are going to put Nancy Pelosi back in.
Someone just like her.
Yeah,
works.
So it's like, but then again,
it doesn't solve the issue of the lack of education in the congressional district.
Right, right. And balanced budgets. Well, most states have a spending limit, you know. And secondly, why do we keep raising the debt ceiling? Because we have a debt ceiling that, you know, they keep going over. So what's the argument are faulty, and this is why they can't win. Thank you, Christian, so much for your time.
Glad to be here.
And I can't wait to have you back. All right, well, stay tuned, folks, because after these messages, we'll be showing you our interview with popular conservative comedian J.P. Sears, who stopped by the studio between shows in Wisconsin.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The Declaration of Independence proclaims God-given rights, and we intend to protect them. Working with people like you for over 50 years, preserving freedom and building a better tomorrow. Safeguarding the Constitution by limiting government power. We are restoring liberties, educating voters, and leading the freedom movement. Join with us. United, we will defend our rights. We are all Americans. We are the John Birch Society.
Sophia paused before the door. It read, Department of Bi-Digital Convergence. Just inside was a new world, a better world, the one of everlasting life, of no pain, of no loss, of no problem. She entered the chamber and her surroundings changed. She saw around her an infinite field of waving golden grain surmounted by cloudless blue sky. The AI voice whispered gently in her mind, "Welcome to the Singularity." She couldn't see it and couldn't feel it, but her body had almost instantly been covered by a swarm of tiny gray multi-legged bots that melted through her clothes and into her skin. Not perceiving the nightmare, her eyes had already been consumed and the rest of her body was dissolving as the bots digested her flesh. She felt only a warmth suffusing her being. Drowsy, she drifted to sleep, and her last thought was one of panic. Would she ever wake? Could a nightmare vision like this be an outcome of the much-hyped transhumanist technological singularity? Enter the world of the future as illuminated by the experience of the past in Endgame, the new book by Dennis Barrett, the publisher of The New American Magazine, and find out how the disastrous COVID pandemic response fits with the technocratic elite's thirst to create a transhumanist utopia. Get Endgame from shopjbs.org with free shipping with code ENDSHIP, ENDSHIP. Or get Endgame and the Great Reset Collector's Issue of The New American Magazine and get free shipping plus an additional 20% off both with code END20, END20.
Hi everyone, this is Veronica Kirilenko of The New American Magazine. We're in Appleton, Wisconsin, where the freedom-loving comedian JP Sears. JP, it's so great to see you. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me, Veronica. I appreciate you.
Anytime. JP, you're here on a tour called Stay Free or Left Trying. So, JP, the state that America is in right now is anything but a laughing matter. Yeah. I hope you'd agree that everyday Americans are facing so many massive issues and they're struggling to deal with them. But yet here you are calling on people to stay free or left trying.
Yeah.
How is it helpful?
It's a good question. I don't know if it is helpful, but I'm biased enough. It's my message that I have to think it's helpful. But I think you're right. Like, the problems in America, they're not a laughing matter. But I do think it's important to laugh at the matter that's happening, because otherwise we're giving away our freedom. We're giving away our freedom to have a happy, good quality of life while we're fighting the good fight. So there's a quote that I love that it kind of serves as my guiding light during this time. Oscar Wilde once said, "Life is too important to take seriously." And I half believe that, in the sense, like, I do think we have to laugh at things, because I don't know about you, but I know very awake, freedom-loving people who have a crappy quality of life. They just feel stressed out all the time. They're afraid of what's happening. They're pissed off. And that's their emotional state most of the time. But I also know other awakened, freedom-loving people who are having a good quality of life. And I think part of the difference is, yes, what's going on is serious. Yes, we got to take it seriously. But simultaneously, I believe we can also laugh at it. So we can have a good quality of life while we're doing our best to make the change that we want to see.
Yes, absolutely. And JP, I was lucky enough to attend your show yesterday. It was hilarious. It was awesome. We had such a fantastic time.
Thank you. Say more about good things. Yeah,
I will. And I will.
But thank you for coming out.
So you made a very interesting and very serious points. You said that you could not even imagine that a civil war would be happening again in America. Yet it is, but it's not conventional, and it's happening in the people's minds. And it's not a direct quote, of course, but I think the idea behind this very important observation is almost spot on. Would you agree that it would be probably more accurate to say that this war is waged not between the different factions of Americans, but maybe by the government, a legacy media, and big tech against all citizens, regardless of their political affiliation?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think the big tech, the maybe we could even say like the deep state, whoever it is that controls the people that we think serve us, I think whoever they can influence, brainwash, mass formation, psychosis to do their bidding, those people become their psychological warfare soldiers. And a lot of those folks, I don't think they know they're fighting someone else's fight. I don't think they're they don't know they're fighting on behalf of, quite frankly, tyranny, but in fact they are. And I think that's in one way a little bit of a crime against humanity. It's a little bit of a mental enslavement thing happening. And at the same time, I'm a fan of personal responsibility. So while someone might be unfairly influenced by propaganda from big tech, government, deep state, it is still that person's personal responsibility to be the steward of their own mind. And if they've allowed their mind to be infiltrated, that does ultimately come down to them and their responsibility.
How exactly would you define the objective of this war?
So I would define the objective of this war, as it seems to me, control. I think control is the objective. Control is the territory that they're trying to conquer. And one could say, like, control over what? And I would say control over everything. I think evil wants to control. If you look at the egotistical nature of any person, egotistical nature is to control. But our spiritual nature is to surrender, is to be in freedom. And I think there's a lot of evil in the world right now. And right now is just like more obvious than it was probably 10 years ago. But I think the nature of evil is to control. I think the nature of God is to free. So right now, I think it actually is a spiritual warfare, I would say, between God and Satan. And I think the evil, the Satan, it wants control.
Control over people's souls, minds, beliefs, emotions. And you mentioned the word psyops, and this is what we've seen, right, during the COVID specifically. Do you think that if it's the case, then political comedy and satire, everything that you do, is a powerful counter-offensive measure in this war?
Yeah, again, I'm biased. I'm a comedian. So yes, I think it's a powerful countermeasure. I don't think it's the only countermeasure. I mean, God help us if the only power we had on the side of humanity was political commentary and comedy. But I do think it's a necessary tool, because comedy, it helps get a message into people's minds for them to consider that they otherwise might not. So, for example, you might hear a beautiful freedom fighter like Dr. Robert Malone speak in a very literal, straightforward message. Very powerful, very insightful. But when that message comes at a person who's maybe on the other side, maybe not completely in control of their mind can create defenses like, oh, that message is different than what I believe to be true. Mm-hmm. So let me shut that down and discount it. But if that aspects of that same message are packaged in the language of comedy, you know, it's got a different wrapping paper to it, a wrapping paper that doesn't look as threatening to the human mind, that doesn't want anything to change. So at times, I think the message wrapped in comedy can get into someone's mind a little bit easier, not to brainwash them, but for to hopefully get them to consider the point that's trying to be made.
Mm-hmm. JP, but you were not always political and you were not always conservative. And you, of course, gained
guilty
legions of new fans, but your old fans were not particularly happy about the changes. So here's what one of your former fans asked on Reddit. What is going on with the YouTuber JP Sears? He used to talk about Zen philosophy and posted satirical sketches. Now he's being labeled a Nazi. It continues. Up until at least the summer of 2020, he was still doing satire from a liberal stance. But today, his new video about Biden's mental health popped up on my YouTube, and it was like a completely different dude. So this user said that making fun of the president for being slow was somehow not very compassionate of you. But anyway, my question is, the ideological shifts in people's minds do not usually happen overnight, unless something, of course, very unexpected, something revolutionary just shatters your belief system. How was it with you? How did you get red-pilled?
Yeah, I'll give you two different answers, because there's two different things that happened inside of me. First answer is nothing about me changed. What I stand for, I used to do like that old viewer of mine. Hey, he was doing like satire about spirituality and Zen philosophy, what I was doing then was calling out the egotistical nature that was hiding. It was hiding in like spirituality. And the egotistical nature, again, it's about control, lies, hypocrisy, and corruption always come from egotistical nature. So that's what I was calling out then. And someone might say like, hey, that seems like safe territory. But now I'm doing the same thing. It's just the playing field that I'm doing it on. It's not Zen spirituality. It's what's happening all over our country. So what I believe what's not changed about me is using comedy to pursue exposing truth, calling out lies, hypocrisy, and corruption. So in that sense, nothing about me changed. But in the other sense, what did change about me is now it's in the political field. And the pandemic was definitely an eye-opening experience for me, where I was born in America and don't like to admit it, but it's true, so I will. I was entitled. I took freedom for granted. But when the pandemic happened and our freedom started getting eroded away, and I know a little bit about history, so you recognize patterns, and I recognized, oh, we're in a pattern. And therefore, because I can see history, I see this, where this will go if we allow it. So that's what woke me up to realize freedom is my number one value. The difference is now I don't take it for granted. So spring of 2020 was certainly a big awakening for me personally about that.
What exactly happened that made you realize? You said you saw a pattern, but what kind of events made you think about this pattern?
Yeah, the erosion of freedom. So stay in your homes, mandates, wear a mask. They definitely work. They're so effective, so you have to wear them. But also they're so ineffective that those people's masks won't work unless you wear those. So we start to see just unlogical stuff happening. And what I would call very unconstitutional stuff happening. So recognize that, then combine with the goalposts keep moving. Like, I don't know, maybe we're still in the first 15 days to slow the spread. It's been a long 15 days. So that was something, okay, the moving the goalposts, we see these illogical mandates that are being imposed at the expense of people's freedoms. I don't like that. And then real data started coming out about COVID. I think it was May 2020, data out of USC came out showing, hey, the COVID infection rates are 22 to 44 times more prevalent than we thought they were. But that's actually good news, because that means the death rate is 22 to 44 times less than what we were told it's going to be. That's good news. Like, this is kind of on par with the flu. Good news. We don't need these restrictions, right, guys? Oh, more restrictions? Okay. So the actual conflicting mandates with the reality that we were seeing, but we were also told we weren't seeing the reality that we're seeing. So the gaslighting, that was also another factor that was just waking me up to what I would say is really going on.
Is it when you got involved with the medical freedom movements and with all the doctors, including Dr. Robert Malone? And because, well, many people were so happy that you participated in the Defeat the Mandates rally in Washington, D.C. last year. Is it when it happened?
No, I would say it happened well before that. And certainly I learned a lot and just, you know, felt strengthened getting involved with the frontline doctors. I identify as a doctor, so I'm one of them. But man, I've been so inspired seeing Dr. Malone, Dr. McCullough, Dr. Pierre Corey, so many others who are literally putting their livelihoods on the line. Many have had their livelihoods as they know it taken away. They're putting their medical license on the line because they're principled people. They're willing to risk losing everything in the name of standing for their principles, standing for what they know is right. That inspires me.
Was COVID, were COVID policies that didn't make any scientific sense, were the reason for you to change your minds about the Second Amendment rights as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So the whole COVID thing definitely made me a pro-gun fan. Why? Because, like, before I used to not be super anti-gun, but a little bit anti-gun. And I hate to admit it, but I fell for the propaganda. We'd see the mass shootings circulate on the evening news, and I, well, okay, well, like, if we didn't have guns, then these wouldn't happen. But what I didn't know about is what happens in countries that are disarmed. And then I really started paying attention to, okay, the Second Amendment is there to so citizens can protect themselves from a tyrannical government. Rewind 5 years ago, I literally laughed at that. I made a video making fun of it. It was like, dude, this is America, a tyrannical government. Give me a break. Then welcome to the 2020s. We see tyranny happening in our own government. So now it makes so much sense, the wisdom the forefathers had of knowing, hey, we're the founding fathers. We know where our hearts are at, but we know we're humans, and we know our predecessors or our successors are going to be humans as well. Part of human nature is to control. And if that gets in the driver's seat, we know what happens. You look at countries that have disarmed their population, tens of millions of people then die in genocide. Tyranny happens. Citizens have no way to, at a physical level, stand for their sovereignty. Now, in America, I certainly hope we never actually need to utilize the Second Amendment in an actionable way. But right now, we are utilizing it, just knowing that's a right. And people who maybe want to really infringe on our freedoms know this is a very armed population. Mm-hmm. We can only go so push so far so fast before they're physically standing for their sovereignty. Yeah. So, yeah.
I'm glad that
I'm a big fan of the Second Amendment now.
Awesome. JP, another topic that you changed your mind about is the conspiracy. You laughed, so the conspiracy theorists too. And, well, many Americans did change their minds. And, well, now we have in the House a select subcommittee that is investigating the weaponization of the federal government. One of its members, Congresswoman Elise Stefanik of New York, she said that the committee will take on the deep state. And you mentioned the deep state already. Donald Trump, who is running again for president, he says that he will obliterate the deep state, and he even has a 10-point plan to do that. So these people do make sense, don't they?
They do to me, and I applaud President Trump for calling out the deep state. Not obviously he knows they're there, but he's not acting like he doesn't know they're there, and he's just calling them out. And I think that's very dangerous because we know. We don't know, but I speculate the lovely folks at the deep state aren't too kind and are maybe willing to do anything in the name of getting control. So I think President Trump puts himself in certainly a dangerous situation, but he's doing it for the greater good, and that's something I really admire.
How do you think the deep state here in America is connected with the people whom you call globalists and globalist forces, such as the WEF, for example, or Bill Gates here in America? How are they cooperating?
Yes.
And for what ends?
Yeah, so I wonder about that. So I look at the World Economic Forum and I like, oh, nothing to be happy about it. Cool, I'm already not happy, guys. So I look at the World Economic Forum, these unelected leaders who govern our elected leaders and governments all over the world. So I look at them and I do wonder, like, cool, is that the head of the deep state? Or do we not even know who the head of the deep state is? Is the World Economic Forum, you know, one of the lower tiers, but it's just, we think it's the upper tier because there's a spotlight on it. So evil operates in the shadows. And anytime there's the light of awareness shined on what someone is doing, they risk losing their power. So I don't have the answer to the question, but I do wonder, Bill Gates, World Economic Forum, they seem like they're running it all. Mm-hmm. But maybe they're answering to someone else. I don't know.
JP, you said they usually tend to operate in the shadows, but usually their agenda is in plain sight. And you made a couple of, well, you made so many hilarious videos, but I want to mention too, specifically, one of them was about the trans political people. Those are are conservatives trapped in liberal bodies, and you describe how them transitioning liberates them, and they feel so awesome about that. And the other one was about how it's getting really increasingly hard for the liberals to stay in denial. Right. So my question is, would you say that the tide is turning and people actually are waking up and starting to realize that their way of life, their freedoms, their liberties are in jeopardy and that they need to do something about it?
Yeah, I think it's taken a while, but I do think we've got a lot of great momentum on the side of freedom, where 3 years into whatever's going on, I think a lot of people have woken up. Now, by summer of 20, it's like, yeah, a lot haven't woken up. But by this point, I think a lot have. And maybe much like yourself, I know so many people who they literally say, I used to be a Democrat, I used to be a liberal, but not anymore. Like the lunatics running that party, the leftists, they drove me to now I'm the other side. Like being a conservative is the only thing that makes sense from a political identification. And then we see someone who I really admire, Tulsi Gabbard. She's transitioned herself out of the Liberal Party. She denounced, I'm no longer a Democrat. I'm an independent. And I think there, someone like Tulsi Gabbard represents what a lot of people are doing in their individual lives of leaving their devotion and affiliation to people who now look just blatantly corrupt and tyrannical, and they're pushing people over to the other side. So I think a lot of people are awakening.
JP, you finished your show yesterday with a call on people to stay active, saying that none of us can afford to be passive anymore. Please elaborate.
Yeah, I think the world we live in, there's no bleachers anymore. It's all arena floor, and we're all making a difference. The question is, are we making the difference we want to see, or are we making the difference we don't want to see? When we make the excuse of like, I can't make a difference, then we become passive. And maybe like we're thinking all the right things, freedom, yeah, that's great. But if we're not actually doing something, we're probably contributing to the change we don't want to see. But when people decide, I'm on the arena floor, and whether I want to or not, I'm making a difference. The choice is mine, one way or the other. So maybe I do want to deliberately strengthen the change I want to see. And I think the most powerful difference any of us can make are letting our words and actions be in impeccable alignment with what our heart and soul knows to be true.
JP, of course, many of our viewers know where to find you, but just in case anyone have been living under the rock, what's the best way to follow you and your work and stay updated on your tours?
Yeah, I appreciate that. My website, awakenwithjp.com, best place to find me, all my stuff's there. So awakenwithjp.com. And if you're offended by me, then awakenwithjp.com is the best place to avoid.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you, Veronica.